Programming sponsored by Charity Mobile. Life is calling. Take it with you. More information at charitymobile.com.
Since the abuse crisis erupted in the church again last summer, U.S. Bishops Conference leadership worked hard for months to prepare new ways to deal with it to roll out at their November meeting. But that plan was halted by the Holy Father before the meeting began. He wanted them to wait until the February summit at the Vatican to handle these matters there. That summit just ended. What did they do, didn't do, and what comes next? I'm Sheila Logminas. Time for a closer look. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. And they weren't the only ones preparing our bishops, leadership of the USCCB, as you well know. And those of you who listen to this program regularly heard from many guests who came in over the months from summer through fall into this past week, who are lay leaders who themselves did things like, say, Tim Bush at Napa Institute was just in again, who in the summer after the abuse crisis really did erupt and kept rolling out with more things. He formed very quickly, hastily put together in Washington, D.C., ahead of the Principled Entrepreneurship Conference at Catholic University of America, an all-day, one-day authentic Catholic reform conference with lay leaders and clergy. It was outstanding, and it was taking the ownership the laity have. We have the mandate, missionary mandate, from our baptism, but the Second Vatican Council also called on us to be the laity engaged in the world, the modern world. That's a very much missionary council, by the way, and we teach that all the time. So he came back in again last week after an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal to talk about this very thing, what we are doing. Well, there have been others preparing for this Vatican summit to give the summit fathers information to take into the summit and hopefully consider. Among them is my guest right now, Mary Rice Hassan, Kate O'Byrne Fellow in Catholic Studies at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, where she directs the Catholic Women's Forum. It's an initiative that responds to Pope Francis's call for women, Catholic women, to assume a higher profile within the church and to think with the church in addressing these problems of the day. Mary's co-author of the book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Children from Public School Before It's Too Late. Hopefully we can get to that as well. Mary, welcome back. What a time to have you in. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Sheila. Yeah, it's been quite an amazing, 6 months.
I know. It has, hasn't it? All the people working on this, I'm really proud of the lady who have stepped up and done what they've mm-hmm. done. I know in January, Mary, when you issued the letter for Catholic women to consider signing, I was one of those who did. And a lot of Catholic women, whether academics, people, members of politics and media, you name it, signed that letter. How many mm-hmm. signatures did you get on that, by the way?
We ended up having over 48,000 women. And I must say, we did finally get a reply from Pope Francis, or at least from his office. It was not signed by him personally, but it said that he had indeed seen the literature, took note of all the signatures, and we received that shortly before the opening of this Vatican summit that we just now completed. So there's some measure of satisfaction. At the same time, almost immediately on the heels of that, we turned around and we sent to him, as well as to the Vatican Organizing Committee and all of the bishops here in the U.S. and a number of the heads of bishops' conferences across the world, we sent them a packet that had a victim statement, some recommendations from a mm-hmm. seminary, a group of seminary professors, and then the results of a huge survey we did of 5,000 Catholic women, just trying to get the voice of Catholic women out there to communicate what women are thinking about this abuse crisis.
And the importance of women's voices right now, Mary, can't be overemphasized, because in the secular media that doesn't very often talk about matters in the church unless it's times like this, the Vatican Summit on Protection of Minors. Otherwise, they really don't turn to what are Catholic women saying, or even the Catholic vote that used to be more important at election time. Don't pay that much attention to that in this age of identity tribal politics, if you will, and they look to other identity groups. And yet, it's very important. Women's voices in general right now seem to keep rising and rising in elevation of importance. I'm thinking back, Mary, at least we've gotten past that period right after the HHS mandate was issued under then President Obama, mm-hmm. that it was called the war on women. You know, Nancy mm-hmm. Pelosi called it that, and others called it that. And it wasn't a war on women. That was just a political title they put on it. But it's that women of all beliefs, we believe very much, can come together and find consensus. Where do we agree and where, how can we start working together? So women's voices being heard as they are, you not only did the January survey and presented those to the Holy Father in the Vatican, but talk now about this report that you issued ahead of this Vatican summit that just completed, mm-hmm. wanting to get through the Apostolic Nuncio and others, wanting to get into the summit father's hands, the results of more than 5,000 U.S. Catholic women, as you say, the testimony of some victims and their families, also recommendations of experienced female seminary professors and key reforms mm-hmm. in the church they believe needed, and so forth. Is that one thing that the Holy Father or the Vatican has acknowledged receiving?
We've gotten acknowledgement from many, many different people, from Father Zollner, who was one of the principal organizers. So I spoke with him personally. I spoke with Cardinal O'Malley as well, and then have received replies from actually a fair number of bishops and cardinals, not just from the U.S., but from different places in the world. And I think there is a willingness to listen. And one of the important things about our survey in particular is that it really reflected the views of women in the pews. These were women who were overwhelmingly attending Mass at least mm-hmm. weekly. Many of them were attending Mass more than just once a week. So they're the faithful Catholics in the pew. And the message to the church was just unmistakable. It's, we want integrity. We want an end to double lives. We want transparency. You know, the basics. And let's also have holiness on top of it, you know.
Right. But, about that.
But what? Julie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear us? Yeah.
Yeah.
Technology, don't you love it?
Yeah. So if I lose you, it may be that I need to switch phones. But
that's all right.
It's important for the church to realize these are the mothers of our seminarians. These.
I think Mary's having some problems with her connection. We're going to get her reconnected here. But in the meantime, it gives me a really good opportunity to share with you what Mary collected as the director of the Catholic Women's Forum at Ethics and Public Policy Center in D.C. EPPC.org is where you can find everything they do and publish there. You can find the Catholic Women's Forum there. But she wrote to Father Hans Zollner, the Jesuit president for the Center for Child Protection at the Pontifical Gregorian University. He was on that panel. If you tuned into EWTN and saw any of the coverage, he was up there right by the Holy Father among the sort of five sitting there, the Holy Father and three, four others. Father Hans Zollner was in charge of that. He was sitting just to the, say, right of the Holy Father. And so this letter went to Father Zollner. And Mary thanked him for the opportunity to offer this submission to prepare for now completed Vatican Summit. She said, this presentation, this is important. I received that survey when it went out as well. It reports the results of a survey recently conducted by the Catholic Women's Forum of 5,038 U.S. women regarding the clergy sexual abuse crisis. We're going to get right back to Mary on this. The survey report was titled Giving Voice to Catholic Women, a survey of U.S. Catholic women on the clergy sexual abuse crisis. And it offered a window into the concerns of Catholic women in the pews, faithful women who generously give of their time and their overall commitment. And that's what we were just talking about when we lost her. But we have her back now. Mary,
back.
You take it from there.
Back, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Sorry about that. So, you know, one of the heartening things here, because this isn't all bad news. One of the good things is the women that we surveyed said that their faith in God is mm-hmm. as strong or stronger than before all of this crisis.
Oh,
and I
wow.
think, and not that some are not wavering and really struggling. I think this has been difficult for everyone. But I think that says something about our faith, that when we can keep our focus on the Lord and on what's true, and we realize we're all sinful, it helps us to keep going. You know, mm-hmm. the apostles didn't fall apart because of Judas. They kept going, and they fulfilled what the Lord had asked of them. So that was a heartening thing to see mm-hmm. that women say their faith is strong. Now, their trust in the hierarchy, that's another thing. And, you know, I think that's, as we might anticipate or might expect, women in particular have expressed very little trust in the Vatican. And we found that 87% of Catholic women said they had not much or no trust in the Vatican and how the Vatican is handling the abuse crisis. And that reflects, I think, the struggles that we've had here, where as our clergy and our bishops have been trying to get ahead of this and trying to deal with these things, then to have to put the brakes on in the fall in response to the Pope's request, I think that really undercut the confidence that many people had that the church, you know, from the top in Rome was really going to address this well. And so, you know, we have to look at what has come out of the summit that was just completed, and yeah, it'd be worth talking about how much of the fruits of that are really going to play out here in the U.S. as opposed to in other countries.
Well, that's true. So now that's a key point, because in other countries, other heads of bishops' conferences from other nations around the world brought different sets of concerns that didn't mirror ours exactly. Mm-hmm. And we have our own unique set of problems that did erupt here in America. Mary, mm-hmm. you've been a part of the series of First Things Magazine's Letters from the Vatican, and they are mm-hmm. all reports and commentary from Rome and elsewhere on this meeting for the protection of minors as it was occurring. I see that you were not only on one of the early ones, you were again on the fifth letter that came out. And talk mm-hmm. about what you expressed there, because there are different crises. There's the crisis of course, the abuse in the first place. But then they were focusing, and you can talk about this, there's some concern about focusing on the abuse of minors, and that has to be first. But I believe it was you who expressed, but then there are other things as well.
Right. And I think one of the expressed purposes of Pope Francis and Father Zollner and the organizing committee for this meeting in Rome was to get everyone globally on the same page in terms of recognizing the evil of clergy abuse of minors, and to really get to stiffen the resolve and get a commitment from everyone to abide by certain protocols and restrictions. And that's all good, especially for some parts of the world that do not have what we have put in place in this country over the past 15, 20 years. But one of the problems with that formulation was it's as if they drew kind of an arbitrary line and looked only at abuse of minors, which is a horrible thing, and, mm-hmm. and what I think everyone has reacted to, but then refused to take up the questions that really we've seen highlighted by former Cardinal McCarrick's abuses of seminarians, some of the news that's come out in the past month or so of abuses against religious sisters and nuns. So there's a wider problem that feeds into the abuse of minors, and that's the lack of sexual integrity and commitment to chaste celibacy mm-hmm. among our clergy and our bishops. And so the piece that I wrote in First Things makes that point that, you know, a solution is only as good as your diagnosis of the problem. And so to the extent that particularly here in the U.S., we've looked at the problem of abuse of minors and we've put in place all of these reporting mechanisms, transparency, and that will improve because obviously over the past year we've identified big holes in that, particularly pertaining to the reporting of allegations against bishops. But that's one limited problem. And so if you focus only on that, you haven't begun to address the problems that, again, feed into that. The clergy who, while they may abuse minors, maybe they're also abusing seminarians. And that really is the McCarrick case. In other words, we can look at that. We can say, you know, if the church had paid attention to how McCarrick was acting and violating his vows of chastity and harassing seminarians and making homosexual overtures towards these young men, if we had paid attention to that and rebuked him or disciplined him or done what needed to be done, that would have been 10, 15, you know, almost 20 years ago that the church mm-hmm. was beginning to get these reports. So we had this situation of McCarrick being a cardinal of high prominence. He was the face of the church's promises, really, in 2002 about how it was, you know, going to safeguard children and there would be no more abuse and all this stuff. And yet he himself was violating committing many, many transgressions, we know now, but particularly against seminarians. It wasn't until he was reported in 2017, there was a report filed that he had abused a minor many years before. It was like that turned the light switch on, and people in the Vatican woke up and said, oh my gosh, we got to do something. But do you see the disconnect there? Mm-hmm. You know, this mm-hmm. was, he was a bad actor. He was not being faithful to his promises. And he was consistently being unfaithful, and he was just, people were looking the other way. So that's the bigger problem that I think is yet to be addressed by the church, that it's, we're going to have one crisis after another if we really don't have from the top this recommitment to live with sexual integrity, to live with sexual or with fidelity to the church's sexual teachings, because that goes along with it too. And then just have basic integrity to be honest, to be truthful, to be faithful to the promises you make. Those are mm-hmm. things any corporation requires. Certainly the church should be able to ask that, you know. So I worry. I think there have been good advances, or at least good talk, right? Good commitments and good awareness that's been raised in the past week over in Rome. But again, mm-hmm. for here in the U.S., we've already addressed pretty much the abuse of minors. We have to improve some things regarding bishops, and we have to do it better. But we really haven't begun to talk about this larger problem. And until we do, we have not seen the end of this crisis.
You make the point eloquently in your First Things magazine letters from the Vatican and about the summit on the abuse of minors, protection of minors, and so have all the other contributors to that series of letters First Things has published. I linked to one on the show page today that Mary was involved in, among other letter writers. But the things that you just said, Mary Rice Hassan is my guest from the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and she's the director of the Catholic Women's Forum, who took a very active part in January sending out a letter that was an open letter from Catholic women to the Holy Father, signed by many tens of thousands of women. And she sent that and then followed up with a survey that over 5,000 Catholic women not just signed, but put their thoughts and expressions of concern into as well, and then got that into the hands of the Vatican fathers, if you will, of the summit, and before ahead of time, and hoping they would consider that. In this letter, Mary, to sort of also go back to what you just said so listeners can get a better mm-hmm. grip on that, you put it so well, like a laser beam, you say, focus on a single tumor. The Vatican has stubbornly insisted that clergy sexual abuse of minors is a standalone problem and has been the only topic under discussion, of course, at this particular summit. And then you went on that metastatic cancer can't be cured by targeting just one tumor. You say those involved in planning this February summit claimed that getting the abuse of minors problem fixed would have spillover effects in addressing other forms of sexual abuse and misconduct. That remains to be seen, you say, Mary Hassan, as the mm-hmm. abuse of minors scandal remains to be fully addressed. But it's worth asking if the church's minors-only approach has been unduly influenced by the views of outside experts on child abuse. So do you have any confidence or sense that while this is the focus of the moment, it is certainly something they're looking at or may look at to expand that look at then when minors grow into now, as you say, older seminarians and so forth, abuse will continue
mm-hmm.
in
right.
some cases.
You know, I think certainly in the U.S., I think there is an increasing awareness of the need to look at what's going on in the seminaries and to really call our men, our priests, the formators, as well as the seminarians, to really call them to live celibacy as a gift. And there was a great piece in First Things as part of the letters from the Vatican during this summit by Father Carter Griffin, mm-hmm. who is a priest and a formator at St. John Paul seminary in Washington, D.C., and he did a great piece on celibacy. And there are some people who think, well, we wouldn't have all these problems of abuse if you didn't have the celibacy requirement. And that's not the right way to think of it. Yeah. And so he did a beautiful job of just explaining celibacy and the gift and what it takes as far as just committing yourself in a larger way to the Lord and to the mission and things like that. So there are definitely, we have so many good priests and bishops, and that's mm-hmm. one thing that I don't want to get Amen. Lost in all of this discussion. You know, we really do. It's just, there are some obvious problems, and there also needs to be, we need to elevate the discussion of this larger sense of what it means to live with chaste celibacy, what it means for all of us to live with sexual integrity and to be faithful to the church's sexual teachings, because the church is under a lot of pressure right now. There's a lot of lobbying from outside forces to change the church's teachings as if that's going to solve the problem. You know, that's we can expect that kind of lobbying.
Exactly. Not so, because the church is the one, it's like Chesterton says, there are many ways to fall, but only one way to stand. And that is with the truth, and the truth as found in the Catholic Church, because the Catholic Church, as Bishop Aprocki says on this show, the Catholic Church doesn't teach it. It's not true because the Catholic Church teaches it. The Catholic Church teaches it because it's true. And by the way, Mary, it was Bishop Thomas Aprocki who said on this show, in discussing these scandals back months ago, his voice got very reflective when he said, you know, it's almost as if they, of course, either the abusers or those who covered up, and that's by no means all or even the majority, but those who did, he said, it's almost as if they don't even see it as a sin anymore. So it really came down to fundamentals of recognizing evil and sin and wrongdoing for what it is. So to your point, Mary, it really, if everyone, priests, holy orders, religious, nuns, sisters, any consecrated life, married people, if everyone practiced the chastity we are called to in our particular vocation, that would end all of this. It would end any abuse of a minor, an adult male, an adult female. I mean, homosexuality, it would just end if we were just simply chaste as we're called to be in our vocation.
Right. And you know what? We're all sinners. Everyone listening to this program, you know, all of us, we're all sinners. And short of criminality, where, you know, you have to act in a certain way and just get the person who's a danger to others out of the situation, you know, we have the grace of confession and repentance, and the sacramental graces that give us strength to live this and to do better. And so when we refuse to name the problem, we're depriving ourselves of the opportunity to say, you know what? I blew it. And I really, I need that grace. I need to go. And I need to help others to recognize when they too have fallen and they need that grace, because they're called to something better. And so we have to live that. We have to help each other live that. But, you know, I totally agree with Bishop Paprocki, because if you think back over the past, since the abuse crisis began, right from the start, that was the time when the beginning of the sexual revolution and the church was sort of reeling from Humanae Vitae, and except for what was coming from the papal teachings, at least in the U.S., the church kind of went silent in terms of proclaiming the truth about sexuality. And so you had this spirit where people felt pretty free to dissent, whether it was on contraception or abortion. And then as the culture shifted in terms of homosexuality, we've seen the majority of Catholics support or will say that they believe same-sex relations are moral, you know, according to Gallup. And that's so we as Catholics have kind of lost our grounding in the truth. And I think that's because the church was silent when it should have been proclaiming that truth. So that's sort of the background that I think contributed to the, you know, the real problem of the clergy looking the other way when their brother priests and bishops are engaging in really bad behavior.
You know, you've got some very good words of advice in summaries in your article, Mary. When I hear you, I think of the Vatican closing remarks to women, and that is, you women, to you, to whom so much has been given in carrying life. You must save mankind and not falling, Mary.